Hey everybody, Tony Jones, Ryan Parker, Killer Cereals. This is our fourth podcast of all time after about a year of doing a blog series, and we are deep into the People versus O.J. Simpson on FX. This is episode 4, which is 100%. What's he say when he stands up? I am absolutely 100% not guilty. That's the plea he enters.
Yep.
Dude, there is so much going on in this episode, so much that I like and want to talk about. For us to keep it to 20 minutes is going to be a challenge. I think, first of all, let me just say something that's occurred to me, and I'd like to get your take because you're more of a, you know more about this stuff than I do. I find the direction compelling. Like, they're doing a lot of these, circular shots where they obviously just have one camera and they do a single shot all the way around the room in conversation. It's happened like with Cochran on the phone. It's happened in Marcia Clark's office with Chris Darden. It's happened in like the interview room in the jail where OJ meets with various attorneys. And there's some other really, I thought the shot during jury selection, when they start with the camera upside down in the courtroom, and then they like pan it upside down across the room. Let me ask you this. I wondered in that shot in the courtroom, if they were playing on the those cameras that they've got in all the NFL games now that are on cables over the stadium.
I didn't even think about that. And that's a great comparison. That's a really great comparison. And I've been a fan of Ryan Murphy and the creative team that he surrounds himself with. And so, you know, to take something like this, I don't know, those camera flourishes, A, are a way to spice it up visually, but like you've pointed out, but I also think it's a way that draws us further into the story, right? I think when you don't do that, and I think subconsciously for a lot of viewers, you just check out, right? If they just have like a two shot and they don't move the camera, you know, you might not pay as close attention as if the camera's moving because you're anticipating, okay, well, what am I going to see next? But you're still seeing the same thing. So I think you're a little bit more engaged with what's going on screen. And there might be, you know, there's probably some technical terminology for what's going on there, but I think it does a good job of drawing.
That kind of in your face direction, it wouldn't work in a two and a half hour movie, right? It would be too much.
Maybe, yeah.
But in a 48-minute episode of a TV show, you can kind of handle it.
I think so, yeah.
That's my take.
No, I agree. Yeah, I think so.
We're watching in episode 4 the ascendancy of Johnny Cochran and the implosion, or it's not quite an implosion. It's more of like a chipping away at Robert Shapiro.
Yeah.
His wife wants him to quit. The press is after him. He wants to cut it. When he walks into that room and wants to cut a deal.
Tone deaf.
To manslaughter and everyone else in the room. Yeah, he's so, so narcissistic. I mean, you think of people like Effie Bailey and Johnny Cochran as narcissistic. But, man, Shapiro is like, these guys are like bastions of empathy compared to Shapiro. He is completely clueless as to what's going on around him.
Yeah, and I think not only are we seeing the ascendancy of Johnny Cochran, you're seeing the ascendancy of the actor who plays him, Courtney B. Vance. I thought that scene with O.J. in the jail cell where he's explaining to O.J. what O.J. meant to him, I mean, that's some powerful writing and performance. I thought that was one of the definitive scenes of the series so far.
Yeah, when Chris Darden is explaining to Marcia Clark about that, you know, you better take Johnny Cochran seriously.
Yeah.
He said something, I wish I would have written it down. He says, you know, we see him at church every week. It wasn't like he goes to church every week. It was like, and I don't even know that it necessarily means that Chris Darden and Johnny Cochran went to the same church. But he meant like we, like our people.
Aware. Yeah.
Johnny's a preacher. Like he's not bullshitting when he's preaching. Like he's a preacher. And that's what he does in that cell.
Yeah. I thought it was fantastic. I thought that was the definitive scene in the episode. And then I thought the scene with, oh goodness, hold on. Bailey and Dershowitz when they screw Shapiro.
Yeah.
I thought that was really good too.
In the that scene at the end, you mean where OJ's on the speakerphone?
Yeah.
That it's so painful.
Yeah.
I mean, having OJ not in the room, just on that speakerphone, and those long silences, you can feel the tension. You know, you want to jump out the window. You don't want to be in that room. It's a terrible room to be in, and you just want to scream at OJ like, make a freaking decision. Like, why are you so hamstrung that you can't make a decision? But he's so incapable of doing anything, of pulling the trigger. You know.
Here's another thing that I find interesting about celebrity and athletes in general, though it doesn't apply to all of them, is I wonder his inability to make a decision, if that doesn't stem from the success that he's had, right? So here's a guy who was a high school standout, college standout, professional standout. Much of his life was dictated for him, right? And then he probably had agents who were putting him in the Hertz commercial. He's just been led along. And so when you get to this point in your life that, and you're facing a situation that most of us will never, thankfully, have to face, he's incapable. But it's not because there's some flaw in him, but that the life that he's lived has robbed him of those abilities. I remember reading an article about a retired football player and whose wife was talking about what it was like to have this person at home, and a person for whom 90% of his life had been scheduled by coaches and managers. And, you know, you wake up on the first Monday after you're retired and you don't have to be at practice and you don't have to be at team meetings. What the hell do you do?
Yeah.
How do you bounce back from that? It was a really compelling article from this wife of a former player.
Yeah, I get that. And yet there are obviously, you know, throwback to episode 2 with Jim Brown.
Yeah.
Like there are other athletes who are, you know, have that, would be able to kind of give themselves over to handlers, but they don't. They continue to maintain a sense of ego. And I think one thing that's really, it's a fascinating character study as stuff comes out in this episode, because you become more frustrated with OJ's just inability to make a decision. You know, like Kardashian says, I think you got to make a change at the top. And OJ says, well, what does Bob say? Like, who cares what Bob says? Bob's the problem.
Yeah.
And then you get Bob Shapiro, like, so narcissistic. He just cannot work with the team. He's put together the dream team, but he can't manage his own dream team.
Yeah.
And then you've got Marcia Clark just getting this devastating news that people don't like her.
So what do you make of that scene, which I thought was fantastic, and it's going to lead to another question, but I think that shows in a very succinct way that this series is also taking the whole judicial system and the trial system in America very seriously, and it doesn't have a lot of good things to say about it, right? I'm wondering if the series isn't ultimately going to posit this argument that the way we do justice is extremely broken. That it's not about justice at all. And you know this. I mean, it's not about justice. It's about how do we feel about other people, right? How do we think they're, you know, and you watch Making a Murder, right? It's the same thing. Like, how do we feel about Stephen Avery? How do the people on the jury feel about him?
Yeah, I've been meaning to talk to you about this, and I think, we can't tackle it all in one episode. But it'll come up over and over again. It's already come up a little bit. Last week you were talking to Richard about how many of your friends are, you know, John Grisham style Southern lawyers. And, you know, you have experience of the legal system from that, friends who are attorneys. I have firsthand experience of being like a litigant over, you know, almost a decade now, a litigant in court. And I so of course, every time something happens in this, I think about that, and I agree. I don't think it's being very, you know, it was interesting, this that little piece where Judge Ito starts talking, but the microphone's too far away and nobody can hear him. And it's like, it's almost like it's amateur hour. And you know, he loses a little bit of credibility in all these high power. And the other thing, you know, when you go into court, like whether it's in family court or in a huge, you know, murder trial, is that these lawyers are getting paid 10 times as much as that judge.
Mm-hmm.
They both went to law school. Like, yeah, they both did the thing, but one of them's pulling down 500, 1,000, 1,500 bucks an hour. And the judge is clocking in at 90 grand a year or whatever. Yeah. He's a public servant.
Yeah.
So you go like, so there's all these complex psychological dynamics. And then you've got Marcia Clark and Chris Darden. And she's like, says to Darden, "Hey, we've both been around this office a long time. And, you know, they've got this boss who's making the call. Like, basically, we're not going to pursue the other guy who drove the Bronco. You know, we're not going to do the, we're not going to do the Santa Monica trial. We're going to do the downtown trial.
We're going to take the death penalty off the table."
Right.
Yeah. Because we can't even kill Manson.
How about that?
Yeah. That's great. That's a great line.
That was an amazing line. Manson. And then you've got that. So yeah, I think you're right. I think it's showing stuff about the American. It's surely not about justice, because nothing that the filmmakers have done have led us to believe anything other than that OJ committed the crime.
Yeah.
And yet, the other crazy thing is about watching this is we all know he gets off.
But you're still, it's still
edge of your seat.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's amazing. You know, when Marcia Clark leans over, like they dismiss a juror, Johnny Cochran says, "I'm feeling lucky today. Let's go back into the lottery of approved jurors. I think we're going to get a divorced black lady."
Yeah.
He says, not black woman. Interesting. He says black lady, kind of uses the vernacular of whatever. And so they dismiss a white guy, and up comes an African-American woman. They seat her in the jury. The, I can't remember the guy's name, Marcia Clark's second attorney, yeah, says, yeah, like, "This is not good. We need a white guy. I'm a white guy." And she goes, "These are smart people. Like, we can't be looking at this color." So the other side, all they're doing is looking at the color of their skin. That's, yeah, all they're doing is, yeah, racial profiling in the jury.
Yeah.
Marcia Clark, the public, the assistant district attorney, is like, "No, let's not look at the color of their skin. Let's just trust people."
And the next most telling scene is at the very end when Cochran walks in, they're all walking to the court, and he looks over and he sees Darden at the desk. And that one look that goes for, what, a second?
Yeah.
Or 2 seconds. If you blink, you miss it. You're like, he's got, "You traitor," you know? Like, what are you doing sitting with her? I thought it was great.
Yeah. Well, especially when you know that they had a past relationship from an earlier conversation. So I think there's a lot, there's different layers. I mean, there's that layer of the American justice system, but there's this, I almost find it more compelling, this layer of these, of the personalities involved. And,
yeah,
but that implicates the justice system. 'Cause you're like, well, maybe if it wouldn't have been Marcia Clark, maybe if it would have been somebody that the jury didn't think was a bitch who never smiled, you know?
So it's, yeah, I think the show, we're starting to see with this fourth episode that it's continuing to add layers, or at least it's drawing attention to different layers in different episodes. So you've already pointed out, we've got the personality layer, which I just think is just bound up in great writing and great acting, right?
Yeah.
You've got commentary on race, you've got commentary on the justice system, and you've got commentary on celebrity. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see if they try to add anything else to this mix.
Yeah.
Moving forward. But even if they don't, I mean, those four things, if they're continually woven together, I guess it'll be ultimately a great series. I'm wondering if, for our purposes, if we're going to need to wait until the end to try to make some sort of spiritual, religious, theological sense of out of all of this, or, you know, because there are religious elements to the especially with episode 3 last week. You know, it'll just be interesting to see if there's anything that you and I, or and especially you, the world that you trade in, you know, does it speak to this show in any way? Are there pushbacks? Are there, or is the show pushing back against the work that you do? I mean, it's interesting.
Yeah, I think one thing that they've set up already is that Johnny Cochran, he's not, Alan Dershowitz is the brilliant Harvard legal mind.
Yeah.
Right. Johnny Cochran is a preacher. And so I think one of the things we should watch this thread is, does Johnny Cochran convince the jury because he's a black preacher and he talks in those rhythms and cadences that the quote unquote downtown jury understands, which is a euphemism for African-American jury in the majority. So when he starts preaching to the jury in his opening closing statements, does that trigger something in them that this guy's trustworthy? He knows these rhythms of the black church, and is that, it's the best defense money could buy. But it's not just. Oftentimes we think that because we think somebody's a brilliant legal scholar, and they know every loophole and they know how to object to everything, which is obviously part of their strategy that Dershowitz is bringing in. But there's this something about,
I think there's a storytelling component to it that we're all drawn to these things, right? It's not just about the jury, or if it's a predominantly African-American jury, although that's obviously a key part in the story, but that the way in which we hear things and that we respond to things and that we're what storytelling and, not just presenting the facts, right? If storytelling and appealing to those emotions, to your point, is what made him quote unquote successful in that moment.
Yeah. And you wonder also if you're seeing, if one of the meta narratives is the changing of the guard in American trial law from the old F. Lee Bailey model, the three-piece suit, the kind of affected English that, as he says, he says to Cochran in this episode, like, time for you to make your move. And, you and I are creatures of the courtroom that we love the turns of phrase. And I'm like, yeah, Johnny Cochran loves the turns of phrase, but not in the way F. Lee Bailey does. He's like, it's not like the more erudite you are, the more convincing you'll be to the jury. It's a different rhythm and cadence than what F. Lee Bailey, and it's almost like he's a dinosaur, in this courtroom, and he's watching this new generation. It's Cochran, and we'll see the role Chris Darden plays. Yeah. And in some ways, I mean, you said Shapiro's tone deaf. In some ways, Marcia Clark is the most tone deaf person in the whole thing. It's almost like she
believes, even trying to tell her and she doesn't hear it.
Yeah, she believes in the system and she doesn't think the system can be rigged by expensive lawyers and tell-all books and breaking news on Current Affair and Inside Edition. She's like, that stuff won't touch us or whatever. And think, oh, honey, man, you know, you're losing already and we know you're going to lose, but now we're seeing why you lose.
Give it 10 years and 10 years on, 20 years on, it's even worse. Yeah.
Here's the last thing I want to ask you, what you think is, and I feel a little bit weird or guilty even asking this.
Uh-oh.
But does the fact that OJ is in prison for another, do you feel somewhat assuaged that, okay, he got off, but ultimately it caught up with him. The dude's in prison for 30 years for another deal. I mean, you maybe aren't thinking that in the scene where Ron Goldman's father is like railing and weeping at Marcia Clark. But in some ways, am I like, well, in the end, justice prevailed because this guy is not a free man.
If That's an interesting question. I don't know how I feel about that. I haven't thought about that. But if, because, then I would also ask, though, kind of an add-on question to that is, if there was never an OJ trial to begin with, would he be in prison for what he's in prison for now?
Yeah.
Probably not for 30 years, right?
Probably not.
So, yeah,
right. That was in Vegas, right? So he got a different jury and he got a different trial. And
yeah, I mean, he was, yeah. So all that public perception and the memory of that event, I mean, of course it influences that decision. To say it doesn't is ludicrous.
Yeah. Well, I think it gets better. I agree with you. The acting is phenomenal. It's funny. A couple of those like potential jurors who just have like a 10-second cameo answering questions and then they get dismissed. You see them up there and you're like, oh, now they're just like normal actors and they're a little stiff and not. And you think, that's when it occurred to me how great all the lead actors are compared to these cameos by, you know, people who went to an open casting or whatever.
I think it's appointment television. I really do.
Yeah, it's
like I try to watch it. If I can't watch it live, I try to watch it as soon as I can.
I mean, that Shapiro, he does it. There's a little part when he goes into his office and they've already, Cochran's, while he's been away in Hawaii for New Year's Eve, Cochran's gotten all the files and he starts screaming at his secretary and he has this little twitch.
Yeah.
And you just think, God, that guy, he's crazy, right? Maybe all our best actors are crazy. I mean, Travolta's freaking crazy.
Yeah.
Like Scientology crazy.
I'm three blocks away from the Scientology Center.
But holy moly, he's a good actor.
Yeah, it's great. Okay, well, next week, episode 5. This is good TV, man. I'm digging it.
All right, we'll see you next week.
Thanks everybody.
For listening to Killer Serials with Jones and Parker.
Later.